Welcome to the conversation from a man's perspective. This is the place where we dialogue about religion, politics, relationships, dating, and social issues. The purpose of our conversations are to stimulate positive communication, thus creating a more harmonious atmosphere. Under the umbrella of Black Pearl Image Consulting, we also hold self-esteem building workshops with powerful motivational speakers to get you to the next level. Here at Black Pearl Image, we bring out the gem in you because we focus on the inner image first and the rest will follow. So check us out at blackpearlimage.com and book your next intimate conversation with one of our panelists, also a self-esteem building workshop with our motivational speakers. See you there.
Everyone, how are you today?
Doing good.
I'm excited today. The name of our show today is called Underneath the Turnout Gear. We have four handsome firemen with us today, and we're going to talk about the thing that keeps them together, why they do what they do. But before we get started, I am Lee Vanna Forrest, your host, with this week's conversation series. And I would like to start out with a very, very short prayer. I just felt it in my spirit that it was most appropriate. So if you will allow me to pray for a few seconds. Thank you, Lord, for now, this time in history, this day, this hour, this minute. Thank you for life today, perplexing, challenging, disturbing, mind-bending in its possibilities. Show me how to live it. Show me, Lord, how to use it, how to glorify it, so that because of me living here and now, fully aware, your kingdom will come a little bit nearer and a little bit sooner and a little bit clearer. Oh, Lord, I ask that you bless these firefighters who have chosen a life to protect and to serve. We ask these things of you, Lord. Amen. Well, like I said, we have firefighters today. They have my heart when I see them, when I hear about them. Sometimes I can just hold my heart, and sometimes I cry, sometimes I pray. But I'm very, very excited to have Mike on the line. Mike, are you there?
I am. I'm here.
And I have Ryan.
I'm here.
Joe?
Hello, I'm here.
Okay, and I think we're waiting on Jeremy, so hopefully Jeremy will join us in a few minutes. But guys, like I said, the name of this show is called Underneath the Turnout Gear. So you guys are going to give us a little bit of intimate details about what it's like to be in your booth. Before we get started, Mike, tell us a little bit about you, where you're from, what your position is within the fire department.
Okay, I'm Michael Smith. Of course, I'm from Concord, North Carolina. Born and raised right here in the city of Concord, North Carolina. Been with the fire department in 2 weeks. It'll be 28 years, and I am a fire captain with the department.
Okay, awesome. 28 years. Mike, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's actually a blessing. So and I can share more with you whenever you start asking questions of us. But yeah, it's been a pretty much a fast 28 years. It doesn't seem like it's been 28 years. I mean, I can remember yesterday just starting in the fire service. Time has really gone by, but I've enjoyed every moment of it.
Yeah, it sounds like you know the time fly when you're having fun. Sounds like you're having a lot of fun.
Oh, I am, without a doubt.
Okay. All right. Awesome. And next we have Ryan. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Ryan.
Okay. My name is Ryan.
like my Michael, I was born and raised here in Concord, North Carolina. I've been with the fire service as this past April would be 24 years.
Oh my goodness.
So it's been a blessing also just to maintain and hold it together.
Yeah. Wow, longevity I hear. Okay, yeah. And we have Mr. Joe.
Hello. My name is Joe Coyle. I'm from Mooresville. I'm originally from New York. I was a volunteer fireman in New York, and that's where I started in this endeavor. I came to Mooresville to be a technical school teacher at NASCAR Tech and did that for a few years and ended up being a better fireman than I was a teacher, I guess, because I'm a career fireman now with Ladder 1 in, on C shift with the City of Concord.
Okay, awesome. I was talking with Joe a little while earlier, and I said, Joe, it's interesting you transitioned from auto mechanic, NASCAR, tech, to firefighter. And that sounds like me. I went from dancing to hairstyling to fraud. So it's an interesting transition. Okay, guys, let's go ahead and get started. I was curious, what was it that made you decide to be a firefighter? Why did you choose that, Mike? What made you choose?
First of all, it's something I've always wanted to do as a child. I mean, you know, to be either a firefighter or a police officer, it's just the authority, especially with the firefighters. You know, you get to see the big fire engines running up and down the road and the sirens. As a small child, automatically, that's something I want to do when I grow up. So it stuck with me through, from a small child, elementary age, all the way up through high school. And, so it was just, pretty much a dream of mine to be a firefighter or a police officer. I went to the fire department first and put in with the fire department and, started at a very young age as a firefighter. Which I was 19 years old when I got hired on with the City of Concord.
Oh, wow.
So, as I stated earlier, it's a blessing to actually do something where you can give back to others. I'm public servant through and through. I enjoy volunteering and giving up my time as well, but the fire service is something that I can also give back.
Right.
Not only to my but I give back just in general. I'm able to give back to, to be that public servant and giving back.
That's awesome. That's a beautiful thing. It would be a beautiful thing if everyone's thought process was in that alignment. thought process, Mike, is in alignment with God, and I like that. That's beautiful. Brian Lee. Why didn't you tell us, why did you choose to be a fireman?
Well, my story is, as growing up, like Michael said, if I was a fireman or a policeman or a doctor or a lawyer, as I got older, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought about military at one time. That was my first choice, but I had my best childhood friend taught me into just trying out just to see how it goes, and the rest is history.
And that was the best talk you ever had, huh?
Yeah. You'll find out, Michael, he's one of my best childhood friends, so we go a long way back.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Okay, I didn't mean to cut you off, Ryan. I'm sorry.
No, I was saying, you'll find out later that, me and Mike were childhood friends, so he actually encouraged me to try it out.
Okay. Oh, so you and Mike Smith?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay, Joe?
Actually, the part of New York I'm from, out on Long Island, there are only volunteer firemen. That's New York City is the largest, or at least one of the largest. I think it may be the largest. And they're professionals, their career. But as far as Long Island goes, once you get out of the city, it's all volunteers. So really what it came down to is somebody's got to do it, you know. So I lived out there, and I figured, well, somebody's got to do it. It might as well be me. And I started, and it just, I kept on doing it. I got really good at it, too. And it's, I guess it's in a way, you know, it's that public service attitude that, that we all have, you know, and Captain Smith is able to articulate it far better than I can, but I just, you know, it was more or less, really was more or less just somebody's better do this, and, I guess I'm the one. I'll do this. And I stuck with it.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, I certainly thank God for men like you. I really do. Now, do you guys have firemen in your family tree?
I do. My great uncle Allie was a New York City fireman for almost 30 years.
Oh, goodness. So he had something, you think, to do with your motivation?
Yeah, you know, just seeing him and knowing the history of it and just the way he used to talk about it and such, it was something that, it was there. I never really had a, you know, a great motivational sense to go and be a career fireman. That didn't really intrigue me. But, the fire service in general did. And being a volunteer filled the bill.
Okay. All right, awesome. So Ryan, what are some of the sacrifices that you've had to make as a fireman?
Sacrifices, a lot, deal with, whenever you have family. In Concord, we work a 24-hour shift and off 48, so you're away from home for 24 hours. And for most of us, you know, we have kids, so therefore, you're away from family for 24 hours, and then, when the holidays come, you know, just starting off, you'll miss a lot of holidays, due to your status. Cause, you know, seniority was a big thing back whenever I started. So missing holidays and being away from family, that's probably one of the most sacrifices that, you know, that we have to do.
Yeah. So it sounds like the family has to really support you and understand.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So, Mike, did you have any sacrifices similar to Ryan's?
Yeah, well, as Ryan was stating, 24-hour shifts can be a long time for, especially for people in our profession. It's, you have to get a family member to really adapt to our lifestyle, because working 24 hours and then we actually get 2 days off. The 2 days off is when we become supposed to come back and spend time with our family and stuff like that. But a lot of times, firefighters normally take second jobs because earlier on in my career, firefighters don't make a lot of money. So if you do stuff to support your family, you know, on your 2 days off. So we go back and, you know, you guys will normally either, you know, cut grass, or, you know, cut, you know, wash cars or work at other jobs. I normally would go and work at, something else that pertained to fire service, which I used to work at, Charlotte Motor Speedway, and I would work there, part-time on a part-time basis. So we normally spend that time away, and a lot of times whenever we come off shift, the morning we come off, most of the time our family will be, our wife or our spouses will be at work, our children will be at school, so that time is away from them until we actually see them that evening when they get out of school or whenever they come home from work. So that 24 hours turn into sometime almost 36 hours away from your family.
Oh my goodness.
And that cycle goes, it's continuing. So you have to have someone that really can understand the actual work schedule of a firefighter. So sacrifices, it's been a sacrifice, but, with me, you know, it's something that, you know, I really kind of talk to, you know, my family about, you know, this is what I do. You have the opportunity to come visit me at the fire station, but, you know, I this is what I love doing. So, you know, please be a part of what I'm doing. So,
exactly. Exactly.
Community. Yeah.
Right. So, love you and support you.
I make the sacrifice.
Yeah. So, Joe, how did your family feel about you being a firefighter?
Actually, I was a little luckier because I was a volunteer when my children were younger. So it was easier to fit a life into that schedule, even though we did run tours. So it was, you did have to be at the station when you had to be at the station. Having said that, my tour was much, much shorter. So it was easier for me to do that when my kids were younger. Now though, you know, it still is. Most of our families, and, you know, even though the kids are grown now and they're out of the house, most Americans live on a 5-day schedule, Monday through Friday and the weekends. And,
right.
You know, weekends and holidays really don't exist for firemen, even though there are the rare weekend where we have Saturday and Sunday off. You still don't get off until early 8 o'clock Saturday morning, so... It does kind of throw the scheduling off when you want to plan something with the family. And, you know, that's about the biggest sacrifice that I've had to try to make is try to fit or actually, you know something? It's not, we don't make the sacrifice, our families do. We're just doing it. It's our job. We're not sacrificing anything. We got to be there. Our families are the ones who make the sacrifice, but that's it. Just what the other guy said too. You know, it's trying to fit a 9-to-5 normal lifestyle in with a 24-48 lifestyle.
Okay. Now, I know Ryan does a couple different things on his off days. And I always find it interesting that those of us that protect, serve, and educate are on the lower income scale. I still haven't figured that out quite yet. But Ryan, what are some of the things that you do?
Promise if you do, you'll let other people know.
Oh, I promise I will.
Okay.
So Ryan, how did you adapt? How does your family deal with your schedule and what are you doing in your off days?
Well, you know, we have several things, like Mike stated, one of my thing is, you know, I've always had a passion, you know, for nice cars and knowing that, you know, the salary that we make, we can't afford the big luxury car. So I take it as whatever you drive, I always keep it clean and keep it up. So I always had a passion for washing cars. That's one of my jobs that I do. Another job I do is, I work out at Charlotte Motor Speedway, which is called, track safety, which is a fire crew composed with an EMS crew. And what we do is, whether people know it or not, the Charlotte Motor Speedway has stuff going on year round. It's just not just the May race and the October race. They have driving schools, functions, they do commercials. So anytime they have functions, they need a fire safety crew and a medical crew out there at all times. So that's one of the other things that I do. I have touched a little bit in cutting grass at times, but
wow.
I had to cut some things out because just wearing me down. So I just do the washing
cars. Sounds like it.
So washing cars and working at the Charlotte Motor Speedway is two of the things that I still do also.
Okay. All right, we are going to take a break, but we are talking with Mike Smith, Ryan Lee, and Joe Coyle, firefighters here in Concord, North Carolina. We'll be back with Conversations from a Man's Perspective. Hello, everyone. We are back with Conversations from a Man's Perspective. I am your host, Lee Vanna Forrest, and joining me, we have Mike Smith, Ryan Lee, and Joe Coyle of Concord Mooresville Firefighters. I am honored to be able to have a conversation with these men. Because of these men, we are safe on this plane anyway. They sacrifice their time, and they are very, very unselfish when it comes to making sure that we are happy, we are safe, and we are secure. So guys, how are you doing so far in the interview?
Good. It's interesting.
Good. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, right now, what did you say?
I said this is definitely.
Oh, okay. All right. Right now, I would like to talk about your training. There may be someone listening who would like to be a fireman, and they're curious about the training that you go through. Tell us a little bit about the first stage of training that you go through, Mike.
Okay. To become a firefighter, there's a process that we normally go through. It's almost like a three-step process to actually become a firefighter, to actually get started with your actual training. First of all, you have to go through a written exam, where it's like a general knowledge test that you take to become a firefighter. We set up things here at our local, hotel. And we send in our training division along with some administrative staff, and we set up a general knowledge test. And the test is anywhere from 100 to 200 question test, just on general knowledge, just to see, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, the way components move. It's some math skills to work with the individual. Once you actually get through that process, they actually want you to at least pass the test with at least an 80 from this test. And after you leave that step, you go into the actual job skills test, where you come out and you actually perform a different task of what we do or simulate what we do on the fire ground. You drag hose, you climb stairs, you go through a darkened maze, you drag hose through that darkened maze, and then you go down and you have to drag a 175-pound dummy about 50 feet. And after you complete that task, you move on to simulating like you're actually climbing a ladder, so you have to at least climb up three stories to make sure you're not you're afraid of heights. And after that, you go and you hit a Kaiser machine. It simulates like you're chopping wood for approximately 30 to 35 seconds. And all this is time-based.
Okay.
Once you complete that task, that's the second phase. If you pass that and you do well, you get the opportunity to come to do an oral exam. You come and you have, an actual job interview. You get to come and get to talk to some of the firefighters on the job. You go and you get a chance to sell yourself of why you want to become a firefighter. So you have different questions that a panel will ask of you, and the questions vary. But we want to see to find out what kind of person we're actually dealing with that's wanting to become a firefighter.
Right.
Through those three steps, you know, the actual written exam.
Hello, everyone. This is Charles Giuliani, and you're listening to Butt Kicking BBS Radio.
You get put on a hiring list, and we have the different categories of hiring list, and then you get a job offer from our administrative staff, and then you go through, if you get accepted, you go through about a 16 to 18 week recruit class. And that's where you learn how to become a firefighter. And all this is fire-based training and EMS training. We teach the firefighters. They go through the process of fire behavior. They learn how to actually drag hose, how to catch hydrants, how to go into a burning building, how to force entry into certain homes with certain doors, how to use the different tools. So there's a lot to it. You have the hazmat aspect also of firefighting. So firefighters not only just fight fire, we go and we actually have to help with hazardous materials calls. We have hazmat technicians. They specialize in hazmat. We have confined space specialists. We have collapse where, you know, a house may collapse because, you know, with tornadoes and stuff in the area, you have things that collapse. So we have to be able to go in and research and find people whenever their homes are collapsed. So there's a whole lot more than just firefighting that you have to become a part of in this career. And the thing, Ivana, I was wanting to share with you is that to ask a firefighter or wanted to become a firefighter, actually, we say firefighters, they say, you know, you want to come into this job. This is not only a job, this is a career. But it also is definitely a calling because everybody can't become a firefighter. Mm-hmm. You have to have a special something about you to become a firefighter. And in those 16, 18 weeks, we find out if you are one of those special people that can go in to a burning building, or if you can go to a hazmat call, or if you can run an auto accident where you possibly could run into death. So.
Right. That's interesting, Mike, because, I'm sorry, Mike, that was interesting because, you know, my next question would be, you know, how do you cope with that? And what are some of the, experiences you guys have had when it comes to the tragedy in your job? Ryan?
I can probably speak for all of us. You know, at first, it was pretty hard. But after years go along, you know, we learn to, you know, not take every thing on a personal level. If you take it on the personal level, that's just a lot of weight on one step itself. being said that, we do have, counseling, or we do have chaplains there at the department. So if it's a traumatic thing that one can't handle, there is help, you know, that he can seek, you know, on the job.
Right. I know Mike did say, you know, this job will really test you. You'll be able to see what you're really made out of. Your first tragedy, your first accident, when you lost, I don't want to say victim. I guess that's what it would be. What did you do? I mean, did you turn to Mike for help, Ryan? Did you turn to someone for help? Did you keep it inside? How did you deal with that on the first time?
I can remember my first fatality. first of all, I wanted to remind everyone that when we first started the fire department, this was back in 1989, 90, 92. We weren't doing first responder then. We were just doing strictly fire. So when they incorporated EMS in, it was new to everyone. I can see it today. I was down at the main station. We was getting ready to eat suppers on a Friday. And the fire department, we have a tradition. Friday is spaghetti day. So at that particular time, we have an engine company and we had a squad unit. The squad was whoever's on the squad, they run the medical calls all day. And the people on the fire truck, they ran fire calls all day. So I happened to be on the medical truck that day, and we had a call come in. Possible victim struck by train.
Oh my goodness.
Oh Lord. So, you know, we go to the call, we get on scene. And sure enough, we don't know if it was a suicide or just an accident, but one of the pedestrians got hit by a train. And need not to say, you know, you can envision someone get hit by a train and pieces are everywhere. And
no, to make Ron, a long story short,
huh?
I said no, I don't want to envision that. I'm sorry.
To make a long story short, when me and my partner come back to eat, I just sat there. He said, well, you're not going to eat? I said, no, I can't eat. After I just what I've seen, I can't eat nothing. So,
right.
I, you know, now, we can look back on it and reflect and laugh and this and that. But then, you know, at that point in time, it's just a serious matter. And, you know, you just have to take things in and you know, take it one day at a time.
Yeah. Joe, how did you handle your first fatality?
I don't know that I remember my first one, but what Cap Smith was saying about all the training is, and that somewhat insulates you, because being a fireman is a very technical job. We are emergency medical technicians, and especially if we go to a car wreck, at least the role that I have on the department, I'm on a ladder truck, so our job is, if the accident is bad enough to cause a fatality, there's probably extrication that has to be done. And that's a pretty technical job. So really what we're doing is we're concentrating on doing our job. And whether it's conscious or not, we try to focus less on the fact that somebody has died. And there may even be living people aside from that person who dies, and that means that we gotta get them out. So we do get somewhat insulated from that, in so much as we got a job to do and we're gonna get it done, and in most cases we gotta get it done pretty quick. So you don't have time to dwell on it. Later on, sometimes it's a bothersome situation. Sometimes, you know, one situation more than others, but over the years, I guess you kind of develop a shield against it, and then life goes on. You know, it's kind of just a defense mechanism, I guess.
Right. Yeah, and Mike did go into great detail about the training, and I'm very surprised. But I'm also, it's great that the training is perfect for each thing that you guys encounter out there in the field. You know, with the ladder and the dragging of all these heavy things, and cause I'm sure an unconscious person, that dead weight is quite a challenge. So the training, I find it's amazing.
Yes, it is. Training is continuous. We continue to train no matter from the first day you accept becoming a firefighter till you walk out the door. It's always continuous training. We have certifications that we have to keep up, so we're obligated by the state to keep 20 hours of firefighter training per month. So that's something that we have to do, and it's we do it also for our department, and it also helps for the ISO ratings, which is an insurance rating that we receive. We get from the state that is part of helping insurance ratings for businesses throughout the city of Concord. But the training itself, it's something that's a must, because the saying is, and Joe and Ryan will tell you, if you don't use it, you lose. So we have to stay on top of our game, because everything always continue to change throughout the year. A house fire, when I first got hired on back in 1986, is totally different to fighting house fire than it is today, because of the different materials that's put in the homes, or the different buildings, the way they design buildings. So we have to keep up with those codes. We also have to keep up with the different materials that's out there, the different chemicals that they put into things in homes today. And then also the interstate and what's going up and down the interstates and along the railways. You have all kinds of hazmat going up and down our interstate. So we train on that. We go back and do I guess it's like we call it our we have our night training, we call it, we have our monthly evolution, so that we make sure that the firefighters are proficient to the basics firefighting. So it's just something that it's a must in the fire service. So if you become a firefighter, you got to realize that you don't stop getting educated. We continue to continue bringing education to you.
Mm-hmm. And you know, with all that training, I can see how even if someone's hurt or someone has passed away in an accident, I can see how you could just kick in and automatically go through your basics. I can see how that works now because it's ongoing, continuous training. You don't forget what's next. You know, you see it, you acknowledge it, but you don't forget what you have to do next. So it makes perfect sense to me now. Wow. Makes me feel much better, too. Well, how do you guys feel about female firefighters? And have you had to work with a female firefighter? Joe?
I actually, my first assignment with Concord, I was at Station 3, and the highest ranking female in the department was assigned to the engine. I was on a ladder and worked together all the time. I tell you the truth, you know, we have two females on my shift. I think it's two. You know, and on a shift, the shift is so big, you never get to know where everyone is, but I think we have two females on my shift, and I know every time I work with them, it never even comes into the equation that they're a female. Last fire I had, I was in the back, and Melanie was driving, and I got out to get the hydrant, and when I got the hydrant dressed, I turned it on because I knew she was going to have the hose hooked up, and, you know, it's just one of the guys, you know, just better looking, that's all.
Okay. Ryan.
Yes.
Tell us some of the things that you guys do to bond when you're sitting around waiting for a call.
Well, like I say, a lot of times from 8, you know, we own like a daily schedule that we have. Like I say, we start at 8 o'clock in the morning, and from 8 to 9, we exercise. So some of us like to run, some of us like to lift weights, as long as we do an hour of physical agility. And a lot of times during that time, you know, we bond and talk. Like I say, like Mike stated earlier, when you train every day, all day, that's another type of bonding that we do. We learn each other what our weaknesses are, what our strengths are. So, you know, that's another way of bonding. After 5 o'clock is our time. You know, we talk, you know, some of us play games, which, we have cornhole boards, or, you know, we play music, or, you know, just do a lot of talking, because like I say, you're doing a 24-hour period, you know, that's who you spend all your time with. So just being together in one place is, you know, a bonding issue.
Okay. Mike, do you think firefighters and firemen and policemen are treated different?
Yes. As coming from the perspective as a civilian, to tell you the truth, firefighters have a reputation of a respect of the person, because we're more. I want to make sure I'm not bashing police officers. Don't get me wrong. Firefighters are just, we have to wear so many different hats as firefighters. We're EMTs, we're firefighters, we go into the schools, we teach fire safety, stop, drop, and roll, we teach them how to exit, doing a actual fire, so they do fire drills at school. We get to interact in a more of a positive way with more of a, of the everyday citizen. Where police officers, they have to make sure they correct and keep them in line, and they're more
disciplinarian.
Yes, they have to be barbaric. That's correct. And we're more of the caring giving. And I could give you lots of examples of the caring giving. And the one example I would like to give, and this is one our fire chiefs like to give a lot. If your mother or grandmother fell and your grandfather was there at her home and he didn't have the strength to pick her up, who are you going to call to come get your grandmother? And your grandmother lives, say she lives in California, and she called you and we need help and there's no other relatives around. They normally, you know, who are you going to call? You don't know who you're going to call. Most time people get on the telephone and maybe dial 911. They let dispatcher know, well, we're not really hurt. I can't pick my husband up or I can't pick my wife up. I don't have the strength. Could you send someone? And that dispatcher said, no problem, we will. We will send the fire department. The fire department is going to get in their apparatus. You're going to come with 3 to 5 guys on the apparatus, and they're going to go to your home. They'll ring the doorbell. They'll go into your home, pick your mother or father up, put them either back in their chair or back in their bed. And while they're there, they will also check to make sure that you have a working smoke detector, that you're actually in a safe environment. But we also make sure that you're okay, so that you don't need, we observe and assess to make sure that you don't need medical attention. So those are some of the things as a firefighter would do in our career or in our profession. Police officers, I mean, you know, they got a great job as well, but I'm telling you that they're more of, you know, you got to respect authority. And they're barbaric, and, you know, if you don't, we're going to put the bracelets on you. If you're driving and drinking, you know, you're going to go to jail.
Exactly. Right.
So we're in the helping business, helping people business. They are, too, but if you're out of line, they're going to take you to a place where you can hopefully straighten yourself up.
Because exactly.
They can't play. So, and I do apologize because I get kind of long-winded when I give my examples.
That is okay, Mike. That's okay.
It's the passion I have for the fire service. It's just,
I can tell. And I'm the same way. I've been told I talk too much, which is probably why I'm on radio right now. Okay, guys. On a lighter note, now I found myself enjoying Chicago Fire, the television show. Do you guys watch that?
No, I don't watch Chicago Fire, no.
Oh, it's awesome. I just wondered how real life is Chicago Fire to what you do every day. So if you don't
as far as rescue things are real, but, you know, a lot of TV shows, they can imitate stuff, but I believe Fire itself is one that you can never really imitate on screen because, you know, doing fire conditions, you know, it's just unbearable and you wouldn't be able to see anything. So
can't see anything, right?
So, I mean, but as far as like the rescue scenarios that they have, most of those are, you know, legitimate and real and you can understand them, but as far as the fire scenes goes, you know, it's unreal.
Okay. You know, my father, he passed away, but my father was chief deputy police in Charleston County. And my brother is also a police officer. So I've had law enforcement around me, you know, my entire life. And I do see the differences in how policemen work and how firefighters work. So, Mike, I thought you gave some great analogies, great comparison to the two professions. Both I highly respect, and it does take a special kind of person to go out there and discipline and protect. So again, I think you guys are awesome. It's really awesome for what you do. Okay, our time is almost up, but at the end of every show, I always ask my men guests to give ladies tips on what they could probably do or what you see that we can do in order to attract a husband. So, Mike, I've asked you to bring your wife in. I don't know if Joe's wife is in the room, but briefly, really quickly, Mike, really quick. Make it quick, Mike. But tell us that one thing when you saw your wife, before she was your wife, what was that one thing, or how did you know, let's put it this way, how did you know she was the one when you met her?
It was her, I know this may sound kind of great, it was her personality.
Really? Was she fun-loving?
She was definitely fun-loving. She's a country girl, so that was the best thing about it. She shared with me things that she did with her family outside of the home, like just being out in the actual fields and actually doing things and helping her mom take care of things around the home. She got to chop wood. Yeah, so she's a good old country girl. This area of, North Carolina, she's actually from like Waxhaw, Union County. She didn't have a television in her home back in the, 60s and 70s. So they had to do things outside, and I enjoyed that about her telling me those stories, and we bonded that way because she was able to tell me about her family.
Okay, great personality, Mrs. Smith. Are you there?
She has not stepped in.
Okay, well, that's fine. Joe?
My wife and I met. We were working in the same dealership together, and I was a mechanic, and she worked in the office.
And she walked by.
And I'll tell you what, the greatest thing about her was she was so good at her job. Because
really?
The way auto mechanics get paid, we get paid on piecework. And somebody has to keep track of what you've done in order to make sure you get paid for what you're doing. And she never missed a beat. Every job that somebody did in that shop got billed right, got paid for. She knew. She was so competent at what she did. It was like, wow, that was the sexiest thing in the world. She could walk into a room and straighten out any problem.
So your wife was very meticulous and on point.
Oh, yeah. Still is.
Oh, wow. Awesome. So, Ryan, give us a tip on what can a lady do to get your attention?
Just someone being themselves. Just down-to-earth person. That's what I like.
Okay. So Ryan likes an authentic woman. Mike likes a great personality, a woman that can chop some wood. And Joe's woman is meticulous. I hear you. Well, guys, it was awesome. We have just been chatting with Mike Smith, Ryan Lee, and Joe Coyle with Concord's Fire Department. Conversations from a Man's Perspective. We'll see you next week, guys. Bye-bye.